This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more, this is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And the Sunbury Motor Studio is mobile today in Piscataway, New Jersey. I feel like I've been more mobile lately than I have in the studio. What do you think, Todd?
It's still like not like when I first started. My first week, you was the Michigan State game in Detroit, and then you were in Florida for a couple days.
That's right. That's true. Yeah, that's true. Forgot about that. Hey, it's the way it goes, you know? Yeah. It's all part of the... Hey. Yeah, so what? Game Thursday, travel Friday, game Saturday, travel Sunday, travel Monday... Game Tuesday with travel back. You know what? I love this job. Right? It's like, to me, it's you know, it's part of, you know, the job. Now, Piscataway, I'll get back to you on that.
Guessing Daytona was a little nicer a couple weeks ago.
Well, I didn't say every part of the job was perfect.
Don't have the ocean view for the show like you did for Daytona?
No, I got a parking lot. Oh, goodness gracious. All right, so let's start with a couple of things. Number one, Carson Beck doesn't have a shot to play in the Sugar Bowl. It's a UCL injury. That means Gunnar Stockton is going to have to be the quarterback for Georgia moving forward. So he's not going to be able to make it. And remember what I said before about the risk of playing in a conference championship game, the two risks are you could lose or you could get somebody hurt. Well, Georgia won, but they lost their starting quarterback. Now, Gunnar played really well. Let's not get around it. He played really well. And I think it was actually a reason why they won the game. In some ways, I thought he played better than Carson Beck, don't you?
From what I saw, he was.
So, again, that's why I give the committee credit. The committee looked at conference championship games and said, hey, look, you made the risk. And they let everybody that was in a conference championship game, that was in the fight for the playoff, like the Iowa State, they had to win to get in. UNLV had to fight to win in to get in. But if you didn't win the game, you weren't penalized. Penn State ended up, even though they were 4 in the final poll, they ended up 6. Texas, you know, they were, what was Texas, 3 in the final poll. They had to go to 5. And SMU got in at 11. And so... that tells me that this committee in this particular year gets it. Extra game, extra risk. You go from there, okay? Mason Graham from Michigan, who was a terrific player. I said going into the Ohio State game that the one area where Ohio State would struggle would be with the Michigan front, Kenneth Grant and Mason Graham. Now, that meant to me they were going to throw the ball. It's like I still to this date, I don't get what they were doing. To this day, I have no idea what they're trying to do. Well, what the goal was, what they're trying to accomplish offensively, I don't know. But I'm saying that as somebody who glanced over. I couldn't sit there and really watch the game. We were doing the pregame show. And I don't know. But Graham, he and Grant have the ability to blow up a game plan on the college level. All right, on the college level. But they think he's going to be a top five pick, and I think he's got at least a chance to be a top 10 pick. How about that? I won't project him as a top five pick. You want to know why? Because you just don't know who's going to trade up, down, and what their needs are, okay? But he's a top 10 pick. How about that?
And it always ends up, it always ends up with three quarterbacks anyway, so.
Right, that's the issue. So there's that. Then there's this new document that came out. Three athletes whose lawsuits have prompted the pending $2.8 billion NCAA antitrust settlement are calling for major structural changes beyond those established through the pending settlement, including enabling college athletes to bargain collectively through the independent association. Okay. Now, I've called for that anyway. Right? I've called for that anyway. And because I think if... did I ever want collective bargaining to happen in college sports? No. Have I changed my mind on it based on the current landscape? Yes. Okay? Here's part of it. I've said this before because I know Charlie Baker is the former governor of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. So he's a politician. He's not really somebody that's ensconced in athletics. Now, obviously, he's been on the job now for more than a year, so he's more and more getting into the athletic side of it. The one area I feel he can help, and he's gone to Capitol Hill a lot, is to somehow get some sort of antitrust relief to allow some of this to happen. That's where he can be a benefit in all this. I don't want government regulation of this because it's not their area of expertise. I think I'm trying to be as fair as possible about this. In other words, I could sit here and say, "Oh, they can't do this, they can't do this." No, this is not a hot take show. You know, we try to talk things out, okay? No, the hot take would be, "Oh, it's government, they can't do anything." No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is it's not their area of expertise. So I'd rather have people that sit down at a bargaining table that understand the ins and outs of college athletics, that understand the ins and outs of athletes, understand the ins and outs of the system, somehow sit down and craft a settlement. I'd rather see that. Now, Todd, you may have a different opinion.
I mean, I think we need some guide rails. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And I don't know how else you get those guide rails without them sitting down together and talking it out. But I don't. I mean, they're going to need. I think they'll need congressional approval, and I'm not sure which way the wind's blowing on that right now.
Yeah, I would just rather again bargaining route. Now, as I said when I started this time, I said, I never would have thought I'd say this in my lifetime. I never thought I would. I mean,
5 years
ago, you'd be talking about it in your lifetime?
No.
Yeah, I mean, did you ever think in your lifetime we'd talk?
Maybe later. not currently.
Yeah. The thought. Sets the House versus the NCAA. Sedona Prince and Nia Harrison issued their request December 2nd in a letter to Judge Claudia Wilkin, who was overseeing the settlement. Although the letter lauds the terms of the settlement, House, Prince, and Harrison warned that without player representation in negotiations with the schools and conferences, athletes would inevitably remain in a vulnerable position and the industry would remain mired in continued litigation. To be honest with you, part of that is true. Now let's tell you the part they left out. Schools and fans are ones that are also left in this vulnerable position. Right now, okay, let's hear Arch Manning. If Arch Manning wanted to go into the transfer portal right now, he can. Right? Well, how great's that for Texas? How great is that for Texas fans? Because he has the freedom to do it this second.
And then again, that's where you need the guide rails at, because I don't have any problems with somebody from, like, I even think maybe this should be after the bowl game. I think they need to do the whole schedule. I think a lot of the problems with the bowl games are probably fixed just by moving the transfer portal maybe into January.
Right. Maybe.
Maybe.
I mean, I can't imagine Mason Graham's going to play in the bowl game for Michigan against Alabama.
No, I mean, you're still going to have the opt-outs for the draft, probably.
Right. Jeffrey Kessler, a lawyer representing the class action plaintiffs, told ESPN he doesn't think the letter, which was provided to ESPN by athletes.org, will derail the process. And Kessler, by the way, has been... When we had Jim Delaney on the show, and I talked to Jim about this case years ago. They changed the names of the plaintiff on it all the time, so I just said, Jim, for the sake of making it easy, let's call it the Kessler case. And he started laughing, because Kessler is the one that's been behind this the entire time. And I say that with admiration, not with disdain. I mean, he's worked hard on this, okay? He said, we need a players association, the players wrote. And again, I agree with that, because part of this is going to be, what can you do with a players association? Okay. Now, number one, they can go on strike, so let's not pretend it's perfect, okay? That's one. But it could set guide rails on and agreed by the athletes and the institutions and the conferences on transfers. It can agree on guide rails on NIL. It can agree on money distribution. How much can go to football? How much can go to tennis? How much can go to volleyball? You know what I mean? Of the $22 million that schools would be the maximum they'd be allowed to dole out right now. It can agree to guidelines on that. How much money goes to women's sports? Okay. Working conditions such as health care, training rooms, standards for training rooms, how much time off athletes get, which in turn means how much time coaches get off. They could set guidelines on recruiting. There's a lot of things that can happen here that I think are positives for both sides if you sit down and you take the year-round calendar of the sport and hammer it out. That's what I think can happen here. Doesn't mean it's perfect. There's no solutions perfect, but I don't want the government involved in it, not because I'm anti-government. It has nothing to do with that. This is not their area of expertise. I'd rather have people who are immersed in it come up with ideas and solutions, because they live it on an everyday basis as an athlete, live it on an everyday basis as an institution, and come to an agreement that way, as opposed to a third party in Washington where it's not their area of expertise. I'd rather have them work on tax policy, transportation policy, defense policy, things like that. That is, happens to be all of their areas of expertise. For example, Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut, he loves sports. So does Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey and Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, right? They all love sports, but there's a long list that, are like, to them, it's like, oh, yeah, great. You know what I mean? There's 535 of them. You're impressed I know all this stuff. Right?
Just 535 of them. Sneak into the civics class.
Yeah, I picked up something along the way, right? But again, of the 535, how many really know sports and know the sports system? I mean, that's my point. And I'd rather have people who are immersed in it on both sides, athlete side and administrative side, get together and put something together that makes sense for both sides. I'd rather see that. All right, we'll take a break. It's opening half hour brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com and News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday. Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
Half hour brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Great to have you with us on the show today. Very quickly about Andy Koltunicki. I think everybody saw that he put out that he was staying at Penn State. I can't say enough good things about Andy, both personally and professionally. Love being around him. Man, do I love being around him. He's a fun guy. But when it comes to work, he's an intense guy. He's demanding, but at the same time, demanding but listens. And he has been such a plus here. He and Tom Allen both. And I've had a couple of people say, well, you knew all about it. I said, no, when it comes to jobs, I don't. You want to know why? I don't ask. To me, that is personal business. And if they want to say something to me, somebody does. And it's not like I haven't had people over here say, hey, you know. And they start the conversation, then I'll listen. But I will never walk up to somebody and say, hey, by the way, I heard. No, it's not. That's not how this job works. So, I mean, I'd read the stories that other people were interested. But to be honest with you, after that, nope, didn't ask. I never asked. Because the bottom line is I never ask. And the reason I don't is I don't think it's my place to ask. It's personal business. I'm sure, Todd, you've kind of been in that same boat yourself. Whereas a reporter, you're like, it's no. I mean, you may have to ask.
Yes.
You may have to ask in a formal setting, not an informal setting. How about that?
Correct.
All right.
And I've been doing this long enough that I mostly do know because, you know, people will tell you stuff off the record, but.
Right. I don't walk up to them. I don't ask them about it. If they ever want to say something to me, and over the years, a couple along the way have said something, but no, it's none of my business. because I'm a big believer in personal business. Huge believer in personal business.
Public figures still need a little privacy.
Yeah, but when you're there on an everyday basis, it's Las Vegas. And as I say, you know, like Las Vegas, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. That's been a strict rule for me forever. So when I saw it, I was like, oh, okay, great.
Hold up.
An in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And this half hour brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV. The best, by the way, when it comes to your insurance needs, and the best when it comes to their ability to make sure you're fully insured and save you money. It's all at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. All right. Todd, you ready?
As I'll ever be.
This may not be pretty. I mean, really.
Just don't take it out on me. I didn't sign Juan Soto.
I mean, you know, what lessons do you teach three young children out of the Juan Soto incident? Does it mean the lesson is to get them playing baseball? My understanding is Matt had the kids out hitting off a tee yesterday in the snow.
And out earlier today, in fact, yes.
That's your lesson.
Because Major League Baseball, by the time my boys are older, still won't have a salary cap in. Who knows what the contracts will be by then? We'll probably be reaching the billions at that point.
You don't seem happy. I hear the kids in the background. Daddy, I don't want to hit anymore. My hands hurt. My hands hurt.
You'll thank me later,
Daddy,
in life.
Daddy! Daddy! Stop, Daddy, please.
Oh, boy, where do we begin, Steve Jones? Well, we'll certainly get to that. We'll get to the Eagles. But I actually did want to start with the college football playoff because I'm flabbergasted, but they actually got it right. I literally do not have one complaint about the structure of the first ever 12-team college football playoff. I think they got every part of it right. And for those of you that want Alabama in it, guess what? You didn't do enough. Too bad. You're out. That's it. Alabama didn't deserve to be in the CFP this year. Now, I hear Nick Saban when you say what he says about the scheduling side of things. You know, is it too much to try not to maybe schedule harder opponents to make your team better? I think maybe there could be a standard set as to what your schedule should look like to qualify you. I don't have a problem with that. But the way it is right now, Alabama was a 3-loss team. SMU deserved to be in. They made it to their championship game. They only had 2 losses. They nearly won. They came back and won the game. So, yeah, this entire thing, the CFP got correct, and I'm very happy about that for year one.
Can we, Todd, use that for the promo?
I'm not used to him starting off with somebody being right.
I know, that's what I mean. I just want proof.
I was going to say, is this a new leaf, sir?
No, this is him trying to get his kids in to see Santa.
That's all right. They've already seen Santa when he came to Nori last week, so we're covered there. But I wanted to start off with that because it's only going to go downhill from here.
Oh, God. Here we go.
But one other note related to the CFP with the terms of the ticket sales. Now, Steve, you probably know better than me as far as what's going on with the students and what allotment they were given before they went on sale to the public yesterday. But I saw something on Twitter that I believe Audrey Snyder reposted yesterday, that apparently there were still some kids that were not able to get tickets when they applied for their allotment and didn't get it, and maybe the CFP kind of snubbed them out a little bit because they're trying to make more money off of it. I don't know what that is, grain of salt wise, but because it's coming from a student. But if that is the case, where the CFP snubbed some of these kids when they should have gotten tickets, then that is a very bad look for the way this is going, because then you continue to go down the rabbit hole of this is all about money. And I just got done saying that they got this right by not choosing brand teams and choosing teams that actually deserve to be in the playoffs, like the SMU-Bama comparison. But then yet, I thought the deal with starting these first-round home games was to bring in the regular season atmosphere that you see at night, for example, with Penn State, when it comes to a true whiteout. The students are the ones that make the atmosphere and make the whiteout. I mean, if you're going to take them out of this, then what's the point? I mean, seriously, what's the point? You can still have 111,000, whatever it is, in Beaver Stadium, Notre Dame Stadium, whatever. But if you're not giving the students their fair share when they're the ones that really start and create the atmosphere, there's something wrong with that.
Okay. First of all, it's their ball game, so I don't know what their rules are. And part of the issue for them is not everybody has 22,000 students that attend their games. I mean, that's part of it. So you're trying to get you're trying to do some of this. I know that they have standards. I don't know how many corporate tickets there are, which is part of what's going on. It's their game. It happens to be in Beaver Stadium, but it's not Penn State's game. And so, I mean, that's what I hate, when somebody's left out, especially when there appears to be room. Let's start with that.
Exactly.
There appears to be a lot of room.
I mean, this definitely seems like one of the good seats from all the ticket mats that I've been seeing the last 24, 36 hours.
So I don't know what standards they put on it. It's their pricing. It's their number of seats. It's their game. They're using Penn State's venue to do it. This is not a moneymaker for Penn State, without question. It's not. Now, parking, concessions, yeah, it'll be a moneymaker for State College. But this is a college football playoff game. Thus, it is their game. So they determine seats, pricing, and the like. And I knew it, and every stadium has a different number when it comes to percentages of students versus percentages of the rest of the stadium, and I can't answer questions on their behalf.
Gotcha. Well, I'll still be curious as to how this plays out. I still think everybody's going to have a full house, but the tickets, from what I've seen so far, at least just seen from Notre Dame, and I'm seeing the hotel prices in State College, it's not cheap, I can tell you that, which is obviously not surprising.
But State College, you have to remember, it's actually exponentially more complicated than that, Matt. Commencement is the next day, on the 22nd.
That's definitely a major factor there, too.
Right. A lot of those hotel rooms were taken for commencement leading in. So I don't even know how many hotel rooms are available in State College, but commencement is actually on Sunday. So, I mean, I'm just trying to at least give everybody some context here. How about that?
Yeah, regardless, that as for State College, at least, is a huge factor. And it is that time because a lot of schools are in finals week across the country. So, yeah, you might be right. And there might be other universities hosting playoff games that might be in the same spot. So, yeah, that's a good point to think about, too. But I at least wanted to start on that positive note, because now, like I said, things are going downhill. So,
okay, everybody strap in.
Before we get it to the Yankees, because this has become the hotter topic quickly after the disaster of an interview from Brandon Graham last night, I actually want to start there. So Brandon Graham is a 15-year veteran. He should know better of what the sacredness of the locker room is. There are certain things that you can say in the media. There are certain things that need to be kept in the locker room within the confines of it. And if you spoil that, there's a good chance that maybe you lose trust in your teammates. And he's lucky that maybe this is his last year. We'll have to see, even though he's hurt. Maybe he might come back next year, but I think that might even be altered now. But he should just, what's so shocking about this is he should know better. First and foremost, A, not to say anything in the media. He does media stuff all the time. He should know the ins and outs of how this all works. And secondly, you break the brotherhood, the sacredness of the locker room, if there is something going on there. Whether you know it or whether you don't, or whether you have all the info or you don't. I mean, so the fact that he said it is what still has my jaw dropping, is the fact that he would do something reckless like this when he already knows that there's still question marks about the quarterback and the passing game and whatnot, despite winning 9 in a row and being 11-2. You just added so much more fuel to the fire, and he said he hopes it doesn't. Well, guess what? It is. You should have thought about that beforehand. And I'll add another thing here. I actually think Nick Sirianni's done a great job handling all this so far. I think he handled himself, and he's been saying all the right things after the game on WIP this morning. I think he's saying the exact right things. His post-game speech in the locker room afterwards, I think, was perfect for what needs to be said, because he knows what happened last year, and he knows the vibe that's needed to change that. I think he's clearly learned from that. But going back to this year, the one thing I still think he needs to do is, he said when Brandon Graham got hurt that he would allow him to be a part of the team because he brings that leadership ability. But after what he did last night, I'm sorry, you're out. If I'm Nick Sirianni, go rehab somewhere else. Go get ready for retirement, or get ready to come back next year somewhere else. Don't worry, don't get out of my locker room right now, because you just, not only did you break that, but you also brought other distractions that this team does not need right now, especially after last year when he was a big part of that. So that's, I think, the one thing Nick Sirianni can still do is tell BG, you know what, we love you, we done all this organization, you've done so much for this organization, but you made a bad mistake, you're out. You're gone for the rest of the season. Go where you have somewhere else.
I hate to ask this, but what did he say? Because I was driving last night. See, I have a life, Matt. So, I mean, I don't know what he said.
Long story short, he basically said that A.J. Brown and Jalen Hurts are no longer friends because they need to do a better job handling the personal with the business.
Well, maybe he's right.
He may be right, but you still don't share that in public. That's the kind of stuff that you keep in the locker room, that your teammates trust you, maybe.
I mean, you and I are still friends.
Yes, that's correct.
Just want to at least establish that so people know. Todd and I are good friends.
Yes, but
there's
certain things that we know about each other that perhaps we wouldn't say in public, or we keep to ourselves.
No, I say everything about you in public.
For the most part, I guess. Maybe we're a bad example. I don't know.
You both know, yes, to get me the ball, too.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, you are the key guy in our offense, Todd.
This is true.
In more ways than one, absolutely. So, I mean, that's what's really got me irked, is just the fact that Brandon Graham knows better. He knows better. And if I'm Nick Sirianni, I got to say, I'm sorry. We love you, but see ya. You brought way more distractions than this team needs right now.
We'll mark you down as a no.
But then the other side to this is what actually happened on the field.
Okay.
With Jalen Hurts and the passing game. I don't think there's anything. Okay. I think there, it's being a little bit overblown, especially by the national media, and I guess the local Philadelphia media to a certain extent, about the passing game. There's issues schematically with the passing game. There's not. if you go back and look at the, if you go back remembering the game, especially in the key touchdown drive that gave the Eagles the lead for good, they converted a couple of big third and longs through the pass game and to A.J. Brown. So schematically, I think everything's fine. You know what the problem is? The quarterback needs to learn to throw the ball when there's guys open. He needs to learn to see the field, and that's something we've been talking about for the last couple of years now. There are several times when I went back and watched the game, and I've even seen pictures of people watching the All-22 from the game, that A.J. Brown was open several times, and then Jalen Hurts would still wait a second or two, then he'd scramble and either get a yard or two or just throw the ball away. And then you would see the frustration from A.J. Brown because he's open and he's not getting the ball. So clearly they're trying to get him targets and get him involved. The quarterback is not executing. And he's talking about the synchronization and everything else. It's on you, pal. It's not on the coaching staff. Again, you heard that from me, who's not a big fan of Nick Sirianni. This is not on Nick Sirianni. The passing game is not the coaching's fault. It's the quarterback's fault because he's not throwing the ball when he's supposed to. For whatever reason, he's too scared to throw the football. I get he hasn't turned the ball over, and that's great. But if you're not making throws either, it all cancels itself out. If you make a bad play, you make a bad play. It's going to happen. But give yourself a chance, especially when you have an offensive line that was giving him more than 3 seconds to throw the football. And he's still throwing it over guys' heads. So I actually have a major problem with the quarterback right now, to be honest with you. And that's the main issue with the passing game right now. It is the quarterback not executing.
So we'll mark you down as a no?
In this case with Jalen Hurts, yes. And I love Jalen Hurts. I still think he's a great player.
He speaks highly of you.
And he's a great leader. But he needs to pick it up right now. This is all on him. And I'm starting to lose a little bit of confidence. Just a little bit. I think overall for the Eagles as a team, I still think they're going to bounce back and beat Pittsburgh on Sunday, simply because I think the Eagles are better in the trenches on both sides of the ball than Pittsburgh, especially their Eagles defensive line to the Steelers' offensive line. I think that's going to create some turnovers and short fields for the Eagles to get them back into a rhythm. But if this doesn't go well again on Sunday, then we might be heading back to what happened last year. But yes, this is fully on the quarterback and not on the coaching staff, and you heard that come from my mouth, who is a big Nick Sirianni hater right now.
He speaks highly of you.
And like I said, he's doing a great – I think he's handling this well. I really do. I give him a lot of credit with the way he's handling this.
Yeah. Let me ask you a serious question. What would you think of the Eagles' passing game and their ability to win games if Saquon Barkley was not there?
Oh, yeah, well, obviously, no. I wouldn't have his confidence. I've already said Saquon Barkley's the team MVP. Okay. If Saquon Barkley's right here, the Eagles are not 11-2. There's no question about it, especially with what you saw in Carolina. I also think it also had something to do with what Carolina did. Carolina's secondary was actually very good, and we knew it had a good young secondary coming into this game. And I thought they could create some problems, which I didn't think the Eagles were going to smash Carolina like everybody else thought. I thought this would be a more competitive game, and it was.
No, Jack Hamm and I were talking about the game on the plane. I can tell you I thought they were going to smash him. And, yeah.
Oh, I really did not, because
didn't
I like
work
the
out
way
that
Carolina
way.
was playing, especially Bryce Young. And I just think it was human nature that the Eagles were going to play down to their opponent, especially. I didn't think this was necessarily a trap game because the Eagles are better, but I just you know, being back at home now, you're going off the big win at Baltimore. I just didn't think the Eagles were gonna beat them soundly. I thought maybe they would win this game by 10 to 14 points, ended up being 6, but I did not see like 40-7 like everybody else was saying.
Well, now Juan Soto, your guy.
As I said before on X yesterday, this is
Oh, you went on
the
X.
Biggest failure
Great.
In franchise history for the New York Yankees. It's plain and simple. As I've told you before, when we first had this conversation, you are the New York Yankees. You do not get outbid by anybody except maybe the L.A. Dodgers. But even that, you are one of the richest franchises in the world. You should never, ever be outbid by anybody, especially the New York stinking Mets. And it wasn't even by that much. It was by $5 million overall and $4.5 million per year. That's all you needed to do. And you even had an extra year than the Mets did. And you still didn't bring them in.
Yeah.
The sweet thing, the security guard thing, I take all that with a grain of salt. If that really was a deal breaker with the sweet thing, then I think maybe the Yankees may have dodged a bullet here, because that tells me something about Soto that I didn't know before, and being a selfish person for wanting a stinking suite for his team, for his guy, for his family, and you can't pay for that, really? If that's the case. But needless to say, the Yankees were still outbid by the New York Mets, and when you get outbid by anybody except maybe the L.A. Dodgers, that is an absolute failure for this type of superstar who literally carried your team last year, especially in the postseason, that literally put you in the World Series. And Brian Cashman said in the winter meetings yesterday that we're not going to be, I forget the exact quote he said, but we're not going to be like drunken sailors or something. You should be.
He's right. I agree with him, to be honest with you. I think that offensively, Soto is a marvelous player. It just doesn't, offensively, his eye at the plate, hit to all fields, hit with power, hit in the clutch, he's marvelous. Defensively, he's a liability. Arm, range, angles, and he's a liability running the bases. That's too much money, in my opinion. If I'm in ownership, I look at everybody and say, guys, we're walking away from this. Okay, it's a bad deal. I walk away. I would have walked away. And the reason I would have walked away is not because I don't think he's an awesome offensive talent, and not because he didn't help, quote, us last year. I walk away because it's a bad deal. I mean, that's too much money long-term invested. I don't know how much is going to be diverted to later. But he's going to be 41 when this is over with. You're stuck with this. I mean, the Mets are stuck with him. Plus the five-year renegotiation thing. Hate that. I mean, there are certain deals in life where the best deal is to walk away. I think the Yankees made the right move and walked away. Now, that's my opinion. I'm not a Yankee fan. So I don't care either way. I'm just giving you what I think is my personal common sense approach to the negotiation.
I get the contract itself is outrageous, and this is why I think this leads to the bigger question, the bigger problem of that there needs to be a salary cap in Major League Baseball. I think we can all agree on that. But this is just the way things are right now, and I think it's worth the risk for the Yankees to have done something like that, because really, now you literally got nothing except for Aaron Judge, but then when it comes to the postseason, you literally have nothing. Because I don't think Giancarlo Stanton is going to repeat what he did in the postseason last year in the regular season, or if the Yankees were to make the postseason next year. I think, if anything, he'd regress. So the Yankees literally do not have any offense except for Aaron Judge in the regular season, and would have nothing in the postseason, and the pitching was already on a teeter-tot as it was. So Cashman's got a lot of work to do, but we're not going to be drunken sailors. Okay. The Yankees need
to go after starting pitchers,
and obviously there's a lot of good bats out there. Teoscar Hernandez, Alex Bregman, and Pete Alonso. The Yankees have to be in the conversation for all those guys if they want to have any sort of plan to be competitive next year for a championship.
But I agree with him when he says we're not going to be drunken sailors out there. I'm sorry, there's got to be a limit. Everybody sits down in the room and say, you know what, he's one guy. You know what, let's save our money and roll it into three guys. That's what the Cardinals did with Albert Pujols. They pulled the $220 million million contract back, and they signed three guys, and they won the World Series.
That's the approach the Yankees have to take now, is they because it's going to take multiple pieces to replace all the stock you had in Juan Soto. That's what they have to do, but they have to be aggressive.
Well, I mean, I think he thinks he's Gehrig and Ruth combined, and he's not either one. He's not even Mickey Mantle. But he's a very talented player, extremely talented. $51 million a year talented? Not in my personal opinion. I think you dodged one there. It also brings you back to the pack of the East.
Because I would love to see another one in the Mets face.
It also brings you back to the pack.
You're listening to News.